Jazz is about community. It's about mm-hmm. democracy. It's about, you know, it's a story of survival. And it's something that I really rely on, you know. We are survivors. Jazz musicians, we really are survivors. And if you're able to teach that to a kid who is going to be 5 years, you know, out of nowhere, you know, maybe not knowing what to do with their life, you know, and if he remember my words and the songs that we play, maybe I did something for the community without knowing it.
This is the Greenleaf Music Podcast, A Noise from the Deep, and I'm Dave Douglas. You just heard the voice and music of Linda Briceño, trumpeter, singer, composer, also known as Ella Brick, originally from Venezuela and a product of El Sistema Music Education. Linda now lives in New York, playing trumpet in bands, performing as a singer-songwriter, and producing in the studio, making videos as well. A few years ago, Linda was named a global shaper by the World Economic Forum in appreciation of her activist work in community support and empowerment. We talk about El Sistema, about her composition and playing, and about what's happening in Venezuela right now. We also talk about the persona she created for her songwriting, Ella Brick, who you may have seen on her popular YouTube series. I just want to remind you that you can email me directly about this podcast at podcast@greenleafmusic.com. And if you enjoy the shows, please consider subscribing to Greenleaf Music at Bandcamp for labels. To subscribe, just go to greenleafmusic.com. You get access to our entire catalog, as well as music that's exclusive for subscribers. It's a sustainable way that we're trying to support new music and musicians, and we hope you'll join us. That's greenleafmusic.com, and thanks. Here's the interview with Linda Briceño. Thanks for listening. Linda Briceño, thank you so much for agreeing to meet with me, talk about music.
It's my pleasure having you at my place, eating arepas.
Well, we haven't eaten the arepas yet, so...
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it smells really good.
I promise you, you'll like them.
So, speaking of arepas, there's a lot of different things to talk about with you. And I, after listening to all this music, I was like, wow, where to begin? So I think the best thing is just to begin in Venezuela, because that you've said how important that is to you.
Yeah. Well, Venezuela is the country where I was born. Mm-hmm. I started music when I was really young. My dad said that I came to his room, that it was filled with instruments, and I started digging in different instruments, and then I saw the trumpet, and I started imitating the sound, and he saw me when I was 4, and he was like, okay, I think she's going to like the trumpet, so I'm going to start helping her out to find that way. And then as I started getting older, you know, he introduced me to the El Sistema, the Venezuelan program that takes kids in different situations, economically, different backgrounds, and they put them together and teach them, you know, classical music. That's how I start, you know.
How old is El Sistema?
El Sistema just has 50 years this year.
So who started that?
Jose Antonio Abreu. Abreu was an economist, you know, mm-hmm. an organist as well. And he decided that he wanted to do something related with kids and music. So he just started teaching different kids, and they started rehearsing in a... ¿Cómo se dice estacionamiento? Yeli? Huh? ¿Cómo se dice estacionamiento? In a parking lot. Yeah, they started rehearsing in a parking lot. And that was the first youth orchestra that he made.
But it was also like a system of education that turned a lot of great musicians.
He kind of like wanted the kids that were learning to teach the younger kids. Mm-hmm. So everybody teach themselves, although that they have no idea of what to be a teacher mean. And that became like a whole, like a huge thing in the Sistema. That's why you can see like a 5-year-old teaching a 3-year-old kid how to play an instrument. It's kind of like
but
a community.
But also a lot of adult musicians like yourself that have come out of that and incredibly well-trained and disciplined musicians. Classical musicians too?
Yeah. I start with classical musician, classical music.
Uh-huh.
But I was also, because my dad is a drummer.
Oh.
I started at the beginning in the orchestra as percussionist. That was my main instrument.
Really?
And later on, I switched again to the trumpet and start being serious about that.
Is this El Sistema still happening now with everything that's going on in Venezuela?
Well, it's a very important question. You know, the Sistema received a lot of funding from the government when Chavez came in 1999. And, you know, they got like a lot of criticism for that, you know.
For taking money
from the government. But it's still like they receive a lot of money, and the Sistema was able to grow a lot, you know, many tours, different orchestras. We're talking about like, you know, almost 1 million of kids, you know, being involved in music in the whole country, you know.
Right.
It's a country that has more symphonic orchestras in the world. So now with the situation, you know, many important figures as Gustavo Dudamel, you know, they has spoke about the crisis and how, you know, the economic crisis is affecting even the members of the Sistema. So they start cutting the funds for the Sistema for that issue and many different problems, you know, regarding that issue.
Was the Simon Bolivar Big Band part of coming out of El Sistema, or was that a separate thing?
Yes.
So you were the director of this big band.
Well, my father was the founder, and I was the founder with him.
I see.
But he was the director. I remember we receiving a phone call from Valdemar Rodriguez, which was one of the executives of the Sistema, and he was saying like, hey, Winton came 5 years ago, and we didn't have anything to show them.
Mm.
You know? We should have our own big band. And then they called my dad, and, you know, we start bringing all these wonderful musicians from New York, including James Zolar, Rolando Briceño, my uncle, and many different musicians from New York scene to go to Venezuela and teach us, you know, basic, you know, the basics of improvisation, Duke Ellington, you know, repertoire, and that's how we start.
What's your father's name?
Andres Briceño.
And is he still involved?
Yeah. He's still the director of the big band. And we have, in the big band, we have many different generations now. You know, I was the first generation, and now they go for the fourth generation, you know.
Yeah.
And many of my friends, you know, they came with me to Venezuela, from mm-hmm. Venezuela to New York, and they're now playing here too.
Around New York.
Yes.
Do you still go back and play in Venezuela?
Well,
the last couple of years, let's say.
Well, in 2014, I was very active, socially speaking. Mm-hmm. I was part of a program of the World Economic Forum, which they call the Global Shapers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is a program that takes, you know, lawyers and medicines, and people like me that it got like a little influence over Venezuela. And they call us leaders, and so we start getting together to find, you know, programs to create better communities. So by the time of 2014, I was living in New York already. There was a lot of protests in Venezuela going on.
Yeah.
And one of our members was really active in those protests, and then he got in prison.
One of the big band members.
Yes. And he got in prison because he was protesting against the government. Mm. And, you know, they start investigating him, and they saw that he was part of this leadership group.
Yeah.
And they thought that that group was like a conspiracy against the government.
So this is the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
Global Shaper.
Yeah.
Thing is yes. what they called that.
Yes, and but we were based in Venezuela. That. Yeah.
You were based in Venezuela.
Yeah, we were part of the Venezuelan Caracas Hub.
And it was about developing ideas for empowerment. And
yes. Yeah, it has nothing to do.
Self-determination
yeah.
and for artists.
Yes. So it was like a non-political thing that has nothing to do to be, you know, involved with political anything like that. Although that we have presidents and people that mm-hmm. discuss in the forums, you know, about the state of the world. So as soon as they start investigating him, they accuse all the members of the group of being terrorists. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I was in that list. Mm-hmm. It was a very painful.
So you can't go back.
I can't go back, you know.
At least for the time being.
Yeah, because we were accused for the president of the Senate by that time. Mm-hmm. Many of my friends, they ran away. My other friend, he got in prison, and then he escaped, basically.
He escaped.
He escaped.
Is he okay now?
He's in Boston, you know.
Okay. Straight from prison to Berkeley?
Well, actually to Harvard.
Harvard,
yeah.
Okay.
So he was able to, he's good right now. But, you know, it's kind of those unfortunate, you know, situations that, you know.
Well, I want to talk some more about that later, mm-hmm. but let's get back to your music first. I'm going to play a little bit of this track, Vestida de Azul, mm-hmm. that you wrote.
Yeah.
And you're singing and playing trumpet, and it's mm-hmm. wonderful.
Thank you.
So that's from your record, Tiempo?
Yes.
2014.
14. Yeah.
Latin Grammy?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes.
And you're singing and songwriting and trumpet playing and production, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So you talked a little bit about actually being a percussionist at the beginning, but I guess hearing all of these different talents come together, I guess my first question is, was the trumpet kind of the first?
Yes.
That thing that led the way for you as a musician?
Definitely. I guess the trumpet opened so many doors for me.
Did it come naturally to you?
Actually, no. I hated it at the beginning. Oh. I told my dad, like...
High five here. Yeah. You can't see it, but yeah. You and me.
I fought with the trumpet so many years when I was young, and wow. I just want to be a normal kid, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm glad that it came the way it came, and now for me is... I feel like I'm a privileged person, you know, for being able to play this instrument, you know. I still have that.
I couldn't express it better myself. I, you know, all those hours, and then when you can actually have a sound and mm-hmm. express that sound and that voice in the music, it's such a gift. It's such a feeling to have that, right?
Yes.
And you have that sound.
Oh.
Was there a point where you found a teacher or a technique that made it come together for
That's
you?
A really beautiful question. I had in Venezuela one mentor. Mm. I believe more in having different kind of teachers that you can take like a little bit mm-hmm, of everything. Mm-hmm. I believe in mentorship a lot. Mm. And I was lucky to have this mentor who turns to be my uncle. Mm. And, you know, his method was very... very basic, you know. He taught me from Clark to Arvan to Haydn concert, you know. But he was very, we got together every single week. Even we didn't have any vacations, you know. I was always in his class every single week. So he tried to make sure, like, to develop this, how can I say this? To develop this need in me to know that the trumpet is something that you really have to do, and it's something that it needs to stick with me until the end, you know. And I developed this strength since I was young, and I feel lucky for those years, because those years are the ones who are sustaining me here right now. I don't have the time to practice as I used to, mm-hmm. but you know, all those years, now I have the knowledge of how to go back whenever I have a concert or, you know, or any commitment related to the trumpet.
What you have to do practice-wise to get into condition
yeah.
to do it.
Yes. But he also taught me so many things about life, mm-hmm. about the music industry, mm. how to defend myself in situations, you know. Because, you know, by the time I was starting in the Sistema, you know, in Venezuela, it was super strange to see a female playing trumpet, you know. I got a lot of bully, mm-hmm. You know, in the orchestra. Mm. And still in, you know, playing with adults later on with my dad when he asked me to play with his band, you know, I had to learn a lot. And he was the one who really put me on the way and... it's funny, he gave me so many advice by the time I was going to be leaving here before I knew I was going to come here, mm. you know. Mm. He was mm. very looking forward for me to come here and look for more opportunities.
I mean, the strength of being a trumpet player and that anti-bullying strategy,
yeah.
they go together in a way, don't they?
Yes, yes.
Wow, that's an incredible gift that he gave you. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
Because I'm sure even now there's situations where...
Yeah, you always find that in... And when I say he was very a mentor for life and for life situations, is because you can get bullied not only for being a trumpet player, you can get bullied in a different work setting, you know.
Yeah.
And you need to find ways of showing integrity and showing the things that you learn, you know, from home.
Good you for
know?
You. Absolutely. And the singing came later for you?
Yeah.
It's a big part of what you do now.
Yeah. Right? So when I was 13 years old, I started getting tired of the trumpet. So I stopped playing music for a while.
When you were 13, yeah.
Yeah, when I was 13.
When you get old, then you, yeah.
I was like, I'm ready. I'm ready to leave this instrument. So it was the time where pop music was coming through Venezuela. American pop music was coming to Venezuela because we had cable for the first time. And we started receiving all this, you know, music from MTV and all those channels. And, you know, I wanted to be famous when I was a kid. I wanted to be a singer. I wanted, you know.
We're talking like late 90s, early 2000s.
Yes, yes.
Which is when cable came to Venezuela and you discovered pop music.
Yeah, I started discovering pop music, you know. Fast food like Papa John's and stuff start coming to my town, and all this kind of like American influences start coming to.
Well, I'm so sorry for some of those things.
I know. I still regret to eat so much pizza. So I started getting all this influence, and I wanted to learn how to write a song. So I started like messing around with the guitar and with the piano a little bit. And I started creating songs. And my dad never took it serious. You know, he bullied me, by the way.
About being like a trumpet player and not being a pop musician and writing songs.
Yes. But it's still I start like learning more. A couple of his friends, you know, start teaching me some Brazilian chords in the guitar. Mm-hmm. I was a huge fan of Maria Rita, the daughter of Elis Regina. So I started listening to her music a lot. And you know, I started mixing so many elements from American pop culture with the roots of Latin America, you know, Brazilian music, and even, why not, Venezuelan music as well.
Wow. Is there anything particular that you would say about this song that we listened to?
Well, Vestida.
In terms of the songwriting?
Yeah, Vestida de Azul. I was listening so much Jamie Cullum. Jamie Cullum is a very jazz pianist that decided to, you know, come a little more close to the pop music, and I find that balance in the music that I wanted to write. I always said like, "Oh, this is the kind of music I will do," you know. So I wrote this song. Inspire in me leaving Venezuela. Actually, Tempo was a record that I decided to produce and to finish as a goodbye to my country. And Vestida de Azul is talking about, like, what if I leave? What if I stay? I will never forget the roots of where I come and the people that I know, you know? And, you know, the arrangement is pretty much the music of the influence of the music I heard. I used to listen a lot of Steely Dan, Kenny Loggins, you know, so I wanted to have that 80s, 90s, you know, feeling in the arrangement when I was writing it.
And the production, too.
And the production, yeah.
So you also learned how to record the music and run a recording session and get all the instruments sounding the way that you want them.
Yeah. It was the first time I got into the studio recording my music.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of mistakes.
Right, but you also had a sound in your head, I guess,
yes.
And you figured out how to technically get that. And would you say that's a big part of what you're doing now, the production element?
Yes. I don't have, I have my, like, a home studio, but I learned how to work with very basic equipment, you know. I learned that, you know, it doesn't matter if you are using GarageBand by the time you're writing or producing, what is most important is, you know, the song that you're writing, you know, the arrangement, you know, the quality of the musicians that you're recording later on. Sometimes people want to be involved with music production and they think like buying the most expensive console is what is going to guarantee, you know, the quality of the product that they're doing. So I was surrounded by so many independent artists and I saw them working with nothing and creating this masterpiece. So I decided that I was not going to be stopped by not having enough resources, and I still keep moving forward.
Wow. Yeah, on the record, you did an arrangement of one of my favorite tunes, and it's a tune that a lot of people will know, Bésame Mucho. And I was just struck by the rearrangement of it, the reharmonization of it, but also, like you were just saying, you know, the production values, the way that you put it together, I thought was really strong.
Yeah. That's a funny story. Gonzalo Grau is a very important composer and arranger from Venezuela that is living, has lived in everywhere. And he and I got together. I came back from this trip. We were playing for the Formula One, and I got this millionaire telling me, I'm going to make you famous. Make a demo for me. I'm going to show it to a record label. I'm like, okay, I will try something out. And then we got together, and I was like, man, I just came from a trip to Mexico, and I can get this song out of my head. I know everybody has recorded in different ways, and but I really want to record this song in this key. And he was like, okay, let's go to the studio. He turns to be in Venezuela at the time, and my friend Diego Alvarez, an amazing cajon player. And it was not any arrangement. Like, we didn't prepare any arrangement. I just gave him, you know, the chords that I wanted to use, the key, and then he made the magic. So everything that you heard in Bésame Mucho was pretty much improvised. So that's why you don't hear bass.
Wow.
It was the piano, you know, flowing the way Gonzalo flows, and Diego doing everything. So it was pretty much improvisation, what we're doing.
Okay, let me play a little of this.
Perderte después, bésame, bésame mucho, como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Bésame, bésame mucho. Bésame mucho, como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Bésame, bésame mucho, que tengo miedo a perderte, perderte después.
So Bésame Mucho, when I invited you on the show, you said, Dave, I'm not really a trumpet player or a jazz musician, so I don't know what. We got past that. Now you're telling me you didn't make that arrangement, but you did pick the chords and the key and the mood, the atmosphere.
Yeah, and the form it. Of
and
that.
And the framing of the song.
Yes. Actually, we didn't start. Usually, Bésame Mucho start with letter A, like Bésame.
Right.
I wanted to start. Que tengo miedo a perderte y no verte de estos. I want to start with the ending of the song, which is something that I guess it will bring the people. Oh.
Well, it's powerful because if you know the song, you hear this thing and you go, wow, right. And it just makes so much sense once you've done it. But I mean, that's framing, that's arranging, that's framing something that you do in your trumpet playing too, right?
Yes.
And as a producer, you think about that a lot, or is this just something that comes naturally to you?
I feel like being a producer is something that has come to me more as a necessity of, you know, of telling a story. And I've I still have like an inner child in me that, you know, I want to be able to tell a story, and I want to make sure that the people, whenever they hear this story, they don't get bored. I don't know if you have experienced this. Sometimes we, as musicians, we are showing our music, and for some reason, the people who listen to the music got distracted because receive a text message. You know, I want to be able to create music that makes the people just stay there and listen and of what they're doing. So I, as a producer, my job is to make sure to create enough colors, to create enough, you know, senses in the people's bodies and minds in order for them to understand what I'm trying to say, you know. It's when you're going to the movies and it's like such a great movie that you don't want to move. You don't even want to eat that popcorn because you're going to miss something. So I want to be able to create music like that.
That's,
you know,
a great instinct. Let's go back to this World Economic Forum situation in Venezuela. Because when you were named a global shaper and, you know, coming out of El Sistema, it sounds like the instinct to give back to the community is already there for you. But because of the crisis there, it's just become so intense and powerful. And I mean, even in these days, I'm reading in the news what's going on, and it's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, what's happening in America is scary, but it's even more scary what's happening in Venezuela. And so you've been involved in all these movement-type activities, and I thought maybe I would first ask you about this song that you produced and sang, Soy Lo Que Decido, which I'll play a little bit of it. But it's also, I'll put a link to the YouTube page because the images are really powerful.
So Lo Que Decido is a tune that I wrote with a very special friend of mine. He's a writer, he's a poet, and also does a little drawing. And he called me and he said, we have to do something about what's happening in Venezuela. And that was last year. A lot of kids and many young people were killed by the hands of police while they were, you know, protesting against the government. You know, there's so many things that besides corruption, it's just like our economy is so bad that many people is just leaving the country. You know, they don't have like, you know, the basic needs in order to survive, you know, like food, you know, money, and it's horrible. So we start writing this song, you know, just telling the story of the ones who left. That's what the song is about. Of I left, but that doesn't mean I don't feel the pain of those who are fighting in the streets today.
Yeah.
And as you can see those images, that's what is reflecting all the musicians who immigrate, most of them. It was Jorge Glam, you know, Baden Goyo, many of my friends who arrived here in this small town, you know. We decided to make this song for them, for those fighting in Venezuela.
Are people in Venezuela able to hear it?
Yes, they were able to hear it. And it was very moving. Some of our friends told us that they started playing the songs while the people were protesting.
Yeah.
And that was very powerful for me to hear, to see that my voice is being heard with music while they're protesting against a government. And it actually, you know, my family was really close of one of the kids who was murdered, you know. It was a 13-year-old boy, you know, I was killed, you know.
In these protests.
In these protests, yeah. Oh, they were terrible. All young. Jelly, yeah. They were like 16-year-olds, you know. They were not even like
16, 14.
It was like they were the ones who were going out to protest, and they were the ones who were targets.
Well, the song is really powerful, and the verse is beautiful, and the everybody playing and the other singers, it's a really powerful thing. So it's Soy lo que decido.
La verdad es muy fácil de entender. Una bomba que explota en la esquina. Aunque no la quieras ver. Aunque no la quieras ver. Antes que alguien más decida, tu vida vale tanto como la mía, aunque no lo quieras ver, aunque no lo quieras ver. Este ardor impertinente con nombre de horror, un cuchillo que nos miente calcinando la razón. Soy lo que decido y nadie puede detener con gritos mis latidos, con sangre lo que sé.
I read the newspaper. I have some idea what's happening there. I'm sure I don't know everything, and it's so complicated, and you still have friends and family and close mm-hmm. associates, and there's a lot of musicians trying to make music in that atmosphere. So I guess the question, what can one do? What can anyone do?
Well, all this disaster, although that has been taking 40 years, is kind of like new for us, so we don't have much organizations that I can tell right now, like, okay, you can donate to this, you can donate to that, because we're not even allowed to receive money from bank accounts, like dollars to dollars, because the money is restricted. However, what I can say is to ask the people to be a little active in social media, and, you know, and be able to share the news with the rest of the people and try to, you know, maybe push the government in order to, I don't know if intervene. I don't think the U.S. is going to intervene at this point. But I feel like...
Yeah. He's threatened.
Yes.
I'm not sure that would even be a good thing.
Yeah, it's not good. But I feel like being aware and telling the story of many of us who had to emigrate is enough right now. Many of my friends didn't know what was happening. Many of my friends didn't know my situation, and it's hard. It's support the Venezuelans who are here and are ready, you know, support them as much as you can, and spread the word.
Yeah, it's hard to know what, I mean, I don't, there's probably social media going on in Venezuela at this time, right?
Yeah.
Voices that one yeah. could follow, and I don't know what those voices are.
Yeah, many mm-hmm. of our friends, you know, they are very active on Instagram, and, you know, they're always posting, you know, situation of injustice. And one of the things that strikes me more is the lack of medicine for cancer treatments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can see the images, and they're really, like, heartbreaking. They're super heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You can see kids, you know, waiting a whole night for the hospital to open to see if they got their medicines. You know, I can show you a picture right now of a kid that I always try to send her money. She has a tumor in her brain.
Mm.
And, you know, she's highly dependent on the people from the USA who is sending her money in order to buy those. We just lost a bass player who was... the player of C4 Trio, C4 Trio of Venezuela, very known Venezuelan group. He just passed away because he didn't have enough medicines, yeah, you know, to treat himself. Amazing musician.
Right. So just be aware and be out there and Instagram. You have a lively Instagram feed of your own.
Yeah.
Which brings us to Ella Brick. What were you going to say?
Don't take too much serious my Instagram.
Let's hear a little Ella Brick. So Ella Brick is this persona that you created.
Yes. And it has to do with when I say I'm not a jazz trumpet player.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I was 16, I didn't, you know, I was dealing with so many issues as every teenager at that age. I didn't feel happy with Linda Briseño, you know, because it was this weird kid that was playing the trumpet and I didn't fit in, you know, in college, in the school. So I wanted to create this person and I started writing songs for her. I started taking pictures of her. I always dreamed to be an actress as well. So I wanted to write this story about this person. And the question was, why would I say, if the people didn't knew I'm Linda Briseño, who would I be? Who would that woman would be? So that's how Ella Brick start. You know, it start with the necessity of showing all the different women that I have to be since I was younger.
Mm.
And right now at this point, when I give her life for the first time, I feel like Ella Brick is a woman that it wants to show freedom. It wants to tell stories that I wouldn't dare to say as Linda, you know.
Hmm.
And for some reason, Linda, I wanted to separate the two of them because, you know, I get this a lot. When are you going to release a jazz record only with the trumpet player, with the trumpet playing? And I want to protect Linda, and I want to be able to show that to my audience maybe in the near future, because there's a jazz that lives inside of me that I respect so much, but that I want to make sure that I'm ready whenever I record that, you know? And right now, Ella Brick is just, she just want to have fun in terms of songwriting and, you know, and saying my experience as an immigrant, as a female, and, you know, maybe telling the story of different women as well in our fights, you know.
Yeah. And it's I mean, you're using all of your talents in this Ella Brick story, right?
Yeah.
And playing trumpet. I'm
fusing everything.
Songwriting. And
yeah.
But it's also, a lot of it is happening on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's not like a CD or a...
It's a video series album.
It's a video series album.
Yes.
And it's not for sale.
Not yet. 11, which is my first single, it is available in all digital platforms. You can find them on iTunes. And also, I'm about to release more songs, so stay in tune in my YouTube channel for it.
Right. But the videos themselves are pretty produced. Right?
Yes.
It's high quality.
Yes,
I go to a lot of trouble and expense and work to get it done, right?
Yes.
So it's a new way of releasing things.
Yes, it's challenging for independent artists. I'm an independent artist still. I'm paying for every single, you know, stuff that I'm doing and producing. Mm. But I'm a huge fan of film and the way film moved me. Yeah. I wanted to be able to give those images to the music I write. I'm a huge fan of film. So.
And you said that Ella Brick arose sort of as an actress personality.
Yes.
Someone from film.
Yes. So I wanted to create that persona, give it life. And I'm a huge fan of David Bowie. And what he did with Ziggy Stardust is something that somehow has influenced the stuff that I've been doing, you know, although that the music is really different.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. But the idea of creating this personality for yourself.
Yes.
That's freeing you up to be able to say what you want to say that you might not say as Linda Bersania.
Yeah.
I love that. I just want to go back to make sure I understood. So you, one of the things you said was you're protecting Linda Briseño so that Linda can make a trumpet jazz record.
My broken English, it may have said it wrong,
No, I think it was clear what you said. I'm just not sure that I... So you're gonna... Part of the rationale of Ella Brick is to give a freedom to Linda Briseño.
Yes.
To play that music.
It's hard. This is a very complex question. Because
sorry.
No. I like it. I'm enjoying it. It's a very complex, you know, playing in the jazz world. Sometimes it can give you a lot of happiness, but it still can give you a lot of trauma. You know, I've been in very unhealthy environments where you go to a jam session and all that you experience is, you know, all this jazz ego that comes sometimes from players.
I don't know what you're talking about.
and I don't understand, and I never did. You know, I actually come from a family where, you know, all that I heard in the place where I live with my parents was jazz, and sometimes I saw my mom being tormented by it, you know. So I have like pretty a specific image with jazz, and I want to create music, but I want to do it because I enjoy it, and not because I'm desperate, you know, to go on tour or record with this with all that, or because I, you know, transcribe all Freddie Hubbard solos, you know. I want to be able to do jazz with respect and with dignity, but I want to do it when I'm ready.
And you want to do it on your own terms. You want to create an environment where there isn't that aggressive atmosphere.
Yes. And talking with so many people from my age and even different musicians, so many musicians have experienced the same, but they're just afraid to say it out loud. You know, two weeks ago, I was in this jam session in a very renowned jazz club in New York. And we all got together and we played. And the drummer, she said, "We pray for that place because there's such a bad energy, you know." And it was for real. When we start playing, you know, when you see the group, those are musicians that will never be playing in that place because usually the energy sometimes that it comes from it, you know, it scares people away from it. So we want to be able to create, you know, spaces that are, you know, nice for the musician to grow. And it's not as sometimes it usually is. It's really hard sometimes to be a jazz musician, you know. It's hard to be in that environment. That's why I don't like labels, and it's hard for me to say I'm a jazz trumpet player. Because maybe for you, Dave, you say, no, of course you are. But maybe the trumpet player next to me who is saying, oh, you're not enough. You're not enough. You're not jazzy enough. You know.
Me too, so.
You're not jazzy enough. You know. You don't sound like this.
Great. I'm not a jazz musician. Now I'm gonna sell some records.
Yeah. So.
Well, yeah. It's about creating that context where it's not that negative thing that you're talking about, and I know what you mean, and it's hard. And in New York, in particular, it's hard. Because it's just there's so many players here and so many great players, but it's also everyone's trying to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes that brings people into community saying, my God, it's so hard to live here. Let's work together on this and support each other.
Yes.
And that, you know, this trumpet festival that we do is about that kind of support, and you're creating this new project that I can't wait to hear with Rachel Terrien and Michael Rodriguez. And I think that's a wonderful thing. I don't know if it's going to lead anywhere, but just the fact that there's a community that can support that kind of work is really
It's very positive. It's really positive. And, you know, I've been lucky to work with Jazz at Lincoln Center close with things that I really care. Instead of, I've been part of this program, Jazz for the Young People, which is that when they call me for the first time, I told them the same thing, like, I'm not really active, I'm not touring with a jazz project, but I would love to be part of going to schools and teach the kids about the beauty of jazz, because jazz is about community, it's about democracy, it's about, you know, it's a story of survival. And it's something that I really rely on, you know. We are survivors. Jazz musicians, we really are survivors. And if you're able to teach that to a kid who is going to be 5 years, you know, out of nowhere, you know, maybe not knowing what to do with their life, you know, and if he remember my words and the songs that we play, maybe I did something for the community without knowing it, you know.
That's great. Yeah.
So in your festival, I feel like we trumpet players, we have this, always this extrovert personality, but you were able to get all these amazing musicians that come from different backgrounds for different settings. You know, Ingrid is somebody that I admire so much.
Ingrid Jensen.
Yeah. And Tom Harrell. I have many stories of Tom Harrell that I would like to talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
But Tom Harrell, you know, his records were my company when I was learning jazz back home. I didn't have a teacher that taught me how to play jazz. I learned jazz playing Tom Harrell's solos. I cannot tell you how many times I repeat the solo of Sail Away, you know, in my head, how many times I play that. And, you know, I really learned playing jazz and writing a lot comes from Tom Harrell's music. So this festival really means a lot to me. And it's
great.
I couldn't believe when you at the beginning, you came to me to school. Hey, I'm doing this festival. Would you like to do it? And I was like, yeah, but I have no idea that it was meant to honor Tom Harrell.
This year, we're giving him our award. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great place to wrap up. And I just want to say thank you so much for making the time, for making all this wonderful music. And I really do hope that you make that record that you're talking about someday and that you tell me about it and let me know what's going on.
Yeah.
Because it's wonderful to hear. And
maybe you'll produce it for me.
You're such a good producer, though. What would you want with me? What do I?
Yeah. Maybe you should produce it.
You know where to reach me.
I will.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Dave.
¿Qué le pasa a Rosa? Que se muere de alegría cuando enseño mi caballo. las arenitas del río corren de